This is Turner Mining Live, where we give you a behind-the-scenes look at how we're innovating to change the game and grow a business in an ancient but still booming industry.
Well, hey guys, welcome back. Man, it's been a long time.
Phew!
It is, it's middle of May, which is crazy. We've done one this year, haven't we? Have we done one in 23?
I think this is number one.
Wow, this is terrible. So, full disclosure, before we get into our guest today. Oh, wow.
Messy on that one.
So, what are you drinking? So, the people at home aren't curious.
So, for everybody at home, Upland Brewing now has something called Little Dragon, which is a light IPA.
That sounded like an advertisement.
I know. Maybe they should sponsor the podcast.
We're not getting we did not get any kickbacks.
From Coors. Remember we were drinking banquet beers?
Well, yeah, we didn't get any money to just give that little pitch there.
Yeah, I know.
So full disclosure, the reason we've been out is mainly my fault. Sarah's done a great job of lining up an awesome podcast schedule for us. Yeah. I'm excited about all the things that are coming for the podcast.
Oh, we're going to get into it.
But we've been very busy, and so the podcast has kind of fallen off of the priority list. But it's back on.
Yeah.
And it's a ton of fun. And the guy that we've got today is a ton of fun.
Yes.
He is down visiting us today and tomorrow, and his name is Paul Moran. And, Paul, it's awesome to have you here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Before we get into who is Paul Moran, and what do you do and why are you on the show? If you're not, I think they're going to be able to watch this podcast. Mm-hmm. If you're not
I'm hoping.
Paul is the epitome of a guy that you want to be at the seasoned spot he's in life.
Yes.
I mean, fit, I'm trying to give him a visual. He's fit. Probably the most fit person in the office today.
Dude swims like miles every day.
Yeah, we'll get into how you do that. I think there's some secrets. But, Paul, welcome. Great to have you. This is your first time on the podcast.
It is. It's my first podcast ever.
So who are you? What do you do? How long have you been here? Give everyone like a two-minute background on what is a Paul Moran.
So my job with Turner Mining Group is I'm the chief commercial officer, which is a fancy way of saying I'm the chief sales guy.
Yep. Hustler.
I'm coming up on 3 years with the company. Congrats. I can't believe it's gone that fast.
Feels like yesterday.
I think that's the one thing as you get older. I mean, time just continues to accelerate. And so...
Is that true? Everyone says that.
For me, it is. You know, I used to think in terms of, a year is a long time. Now, and then I started thinking in increments of 5 years.
Yeah.
And now it's like, 20 years seems like yesterday. So I guess.
Do you still feel, because I've heard people say, the same people that say, time gets faster as you get older. Do you still feel like you're in your mid-20s or 30? Or?
I do. I do, yes. Because I try to, even though I'm old or older.
He's not even old.
I like to think like I'm still young and that I can still do the things that when I was in my 30s, I can still do them now. And I think that's kind of what pushes me. And
I think you could do more push-ups than Thomas and I both right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know about that.
But. Sorry. So, chief commercial officer, glorified sales guy, but much more than that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, So in my role at Turner, I spend a lot of time networking into our target companies, the companies we'd like to do business with, as well as our current customers. I try to get to know people in the higher levels of the organizations. Not that the people at the front lines and the people at the mines are not important. They're extremely important, and I like to get to know those people.
Yeah, those are the ones you might
respect. But the one thing I've learned, over the years, and this is true in previous lives as well, is that part of your job in sales is to kind of connect the dots within the organization that you're going after. Because sometimes, oftentimes they're large companies, one part of the organization may not be talking to the other part of the organization. Mm. And yeah. sometimes we have to be, we as a supplier have to become the conduit to connect those dots.
So yeah. you're almost viewing it as not only being a partner and providing the service that we provide, but also like being a partner as in helping their organization function at a higher level.
Exactly. And so that means you're spending time focusing on people at the headquarters, mm-hmm. whether they're purchasing people or technical people that support the field. And then you really need the connections and you need the relationships at the mine site as well.
Yeah.
Because they're the boots on the ground. They're the ones that are making it happen. And you need to have credibility. Yeah. With those people.
Well, so you've been here almost 3 years.
3 years,
and, yep. and we're going to get in. I've got some notes here on my phone, things I definitely want to touch on. We're going to get into sales funnels, how you think about sales. Mm-hmm. I think, and we'll get into this a little bit later, I think people either have natural sales DNA or they don't. Mm-hmm. I think you're one of the best sales guys I've ever seen. But before all that, I want people to understand who you are, why they should listen to you. How did you even get where you are? Like, what's your background? Because I wouldn't say you're a mining guy, but I would say you've been a tremendous success doing what you're doing in the mining yeah. industry. So what's your background?
So my background is, I grew up in a big family. I'm one of eight kids. Towards the end of that family, and my family was mostly medical, actually. My dad was a doctor. I have four siblings who are doctors. And I was kind of, came along and I remember thinking about what am I going to do? And I wasn't smart enough to be a doctor. So I did actually look at it once. One of my brothers was in his residency and he took me to make rounds one night. He was working a graveyard shift in his early days. And I saw him remove a catheter from a guy and I thought there is absolutely no way yep. I'm going to do this for a living.
You made the right choice.
But fast forward. So I went in, business. I was always interested in business. Through high school, a little landscaping company, and I like doing stuff on my own. I think, when you're one of eight, you sort of learn to get along with everybody, especially when you're the bottom end of the family.
Right.
And I like being around people. And so for me, business was a good fit, sales in particular, management early in my career, early up through, I've only had three employers, before Turner Mining Group, two employers, then Turner Mining Group.
Right.
But I always liked the relationship side of things and building relationships with people, whether they're people that you work with or your customers, and then sort of learning to leverage those relationships. And I don't mean that in a manipulative way, but in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Working with people, making people feel good about what they're doing, educating them, learning from them. I think I've always been a good listener, which I think has helped me in both from a management side, again, managing, leading people in previous roles, as well as listening to the customer. I think one of the hardest things for anybody in sales to do, including myself, is to really listen to what is the customer saying and dissect, okay, what are they telling us? Because oftentimes you miss that message. If you don't listen carefully,
right.
you miss that message. And you'll invest a lot of time and energy into something that in the end is probably not going to result in anything because you sort of missed the point,
mm-hmm.
whatever that might be, service problem, price issue, or whatever.
For you to be successful at your job now, I think being in several layers of management throughout the years and operations and your two previous employers, I mean, your experience set is unique, but you've over the years really grown and kind of done yeah. it all, right? Like
right.
you started entry level, you worked your way up, you've built teams. Like I feel like, especially now in your position, having, if you were just a sales guy your whole career, I don't think you could do your current job the way you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your job now is so much more than sales, but for me, and it's one of the things I want to talk about, how does a young guy that's maybe a haul truck driver that's 18 or 20 years old, they look at you now, dressed well, buttoned down, slacks, dress shoes, like, and you can have high level conversations with CEOs, CFOs, technical people. even beyond your, you know, comprehension and knowledge base, like you're very good in every room I've ever seen you in. Mm-hmm. How does a young person transcend from where they are, like starting out in, you know, whether it's boots in the dirt career or it's a little more of a white collar career? How do they transcend to where you are?
Well, I think, you know, I think first of all, a lot of it is, it's hard work. I mean, it's really being willing to put in the time, not only to your job, but in yourself. And what I mean by that is I always like to look up to people, whoever it is. So I, like, even as a kid, I looked up to my oldest brother because he was always out there. He was a hard worker. He did well. He worked hard in school. He worked hard in sports. He went to the Naval Academy. So I was just aspired to, and he's 13 years older than I am. And I learned early on that it's good to have a mentor. It's good to have someone that you aspire to be. And when I was young, I aspired to be like him. And he was always working out. And I think that's probably had an impact on me at a very young age. When I think about work, when I think about my career, same thing. I there were a couple key people that it was people that always attracted me to the job that I was interviewing for. The organization was important, but it was the people that were more important. And when I think back, you know, I've worked for three CEOs. You're the third president and CEO that I've worked for. And when I look back, there was always something about those people that I looked up to and saw qualities that I thought, okay, I like that quality. So I'm going to figure out how to have that quality or how to really learn how to do that, whatever it was.
So I got to ask, because this is not on the list of questions. I'm easily the youngest CEO you've worked for. How do I stack up? And Thomas, you can't answer.
I was so going to ask the same question.
Not, I don't, this is not Thomas. I'm not sucking up.
He's turned red and he's going to lie.
I know.
He's
going to
lie on the podcast.
So I'm not sucking up, even though this will sound like I'm sucking up. So the you know, one of the things that attracted me to Turner Mining Group, because I think you're probably one of my kids' age, if not younger, is, you know, if there's something about somebody that is likable, you know, I don't care what their age is, and you know, that's important to me. My previous CEO, the company I came from, he happens to still be to this day, we're best friends. But I always looked up to him because he had a vision. He had charisma about him. He was a salesman. Mm-hmm. He's like, and that's kind of, I mean,
yeah.
I see that in you, Keaton. I think that you have that ability to put, you know, important messages and initiatives into really simple to understand terms. And that's what when I think about previous mentors, and I worked for a lot of other people other than just the CEOs, but at some point in both companies I was in, I ended up working for the CEO. And so when I think back about that, I think, well, what was the common denominator? The common denominator was I always learned from them. I respected them. I wanted to follow them. So they had great leadership skills. And going back to your original question is you learn if you have a mentor, whoever it is, and it doesn't have to be a CEO. It wasn't a CEO early on. Early on, it might have been my first or second level supervisor, whoever mm-hmm. I was working for. And certainly there were ones along the ways I didn't like because I didn't respect them because they'd say one thing and do another thing. You know, I like people who are solid, who are just like, if they tell you they're going to do something, they're going to do it. And if they fail doing it, it's not because they didn't try. Mm-hmm. I've never been the smartest guy, you know, around. I mean, when I think about my previous CEO, he was always, you know, thinking five steps ahead of everybody else, including me. You're like that. You're like that, Thomas. You guys have, and so I always respected that because it was always, and sometimes it'd piss you off because you'd be like, God damn, what? Sorry about that.
Not
what? You know, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah,
you know, like well, I that happens with you. You know, every couple of weeks you'll Slack me a message. I'll be like, damn, I should have thought of that. That's my job. That's not your job. And so, but that kind of keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
Because then it makes you think, okay, all right, I get why he was thinking that might be a good idea. Now I should be thinking that way. And so again, I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but
well, you said something there. That, and by the way, he can't tell me I'm a bad CEO on the podcast. So
yeah,
that's fine. Paul, we'll talk after this. No, but you said something in your response. You said I didn't always work for the CEO. I kind of worked my way up there, but along that climb, you worked for bad bosses, people that you didn't enjoy working for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How, and I'll just say this, I think this day and age, you see so many people, the second they work for a bad boss, they're checked out.
Mm-hmm.
They either don't do their job or they quit their job and go work for somebody else. They don't see it through.
Right.
Is how I would put it.
Right.
What made you, you know, go from a bad, you know, working for a bad boss or a bad manager to eventually working for the CEO?
Mm-hmm. Which means, by the way,
you got through that.
I was going to say, you literally had to have progressed past that person.
Well, and I think, right.
Yeah.
So I think you have to, I mean, you have to sort of look at the big picture too. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So if you might have a bad...
That's a baby boomer comment.
I am a baby boomer. I'll leave it at that. People can try to figure out my age. But I think that you will run into challenging bosses and different... And I don't mind... I don't mind a challenging boss. That's different than a bad boss.
Right.
So if I ran into that, then I'd look at the organization and say, culturally, this organization is the kind of company I want to work for. I feel good about the company. So, yeah, this person may be a little bit of a thorn in my side, or I don't agree with them, or I don't respect them. But as long as they're not doing anything illegal or unethical, and I actually run into that, keep plugging away, do a good job, and you'll be rewarded for that.
Well, you say, you know, as long as I feel good about the company and where the company's going, and maybe it's the specific leader of the company, whatever, but I know here specifically at Turner Mining Group over the years, you know, we've had people that I won't say are bad people, but they definitely don't have the same morals or ethical behavior, or maybe even just personality types that I would want in one of our leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen so many folks, I shouldn't say so many, but you've seen good people leave pretty quickly, head for the exits, as soon as they encounter one of those tough bosses, or challenging bosses, or you could even say bad bosses. It's fascinating to me when someone like you says, I liked what the company was about. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just had to learn to, you know, get through it, or the other thorn in my side, whatever the case may be. That's just not this day and age with this generation. That's not a concept I think resonates.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
I think maybe a little bit. I mean, I think, and I've heard, you know, I think I've heard on previous podcasts this word mentioned, or this quality, and I believe it a lot, but patience is important.
Right.
I think that, you know, you things don't always go the way they're planned or the way you want them to go. And so, but you also don't want to be knee-jerk about it and just say, well, okay, I'm done, and move on or quit or go to another company. I think I heard you recently, or you might have been in a LinkedIn message talking about to a previous employee who came back and said, you know, the grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Right.
And and that's so true. Sometimes it is.
Yeah. But had that employee stayed another 6 months, his boss ultimately ended up getting fired. That employee would have been in a totally different spot today than where they are now at their other company.
Exactly. And that's where the culture of the company comes in, mm-hmm. and even the higher level leadership. So I always knew, I guess from being a young person, and if I, you know, that I was fortunate, and I, maybe it was just lucky, but, you know, I always felt like if you worked hard, you did your job, you know, you give everything you can to get it done, that effort will be recognized. And then at some point, if that effort's not recognized, well, then, you know, maybe it's time to leave.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I'm also hearing buried in here when you said kind of see the bigger picture And then you gave the, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of comment. What I'm also somewhat hearing in this as we kind of dive in a little further is that you actually saw in a weird way a bad boss as actually an opportunity, because what you saw was they likely were not a long-term fit with the organization, which meant likely that spot would potentially open up, or they might get moved somewhere else, or, you know, put off into the corner or something like that. But you viewed it as, yeah, but if I'm going to keep delivering, I might be the next person into that spot.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if I ever really, what's the right word? One of the things I'm not great at, and I'll admit it, is strategy. I wish I was better at strategy. I feel like I can think strategically, but sometimes it's, I just do what feels natural.
Right.
And then, fortunately, and I've been very fortunate, things tend to work out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but you're delivering that whole time.
Well, and that's why, you know, so people say, you know, work, don't work harder, work smarter.
Right.
And for me, and I think that's a good saying, but for me, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
For me, it's work smarter and work harder.
Right.
And the reason I say that is because, you know, sometimes you don't have the answer. You don't really know what's going to happen. I don't know that bad boss is going to be, you know, out of here in 2 months or
right.
6 months.
Right.
Especially when I was early in my career, because I wasn't high enough in the organization.
Yeah. To know or be in the know.
You know, so you just did what you could do. And so I would invest, and for young people, I think this is true. And this was true when I was younger, watching young people come up through the organization, and I still see it today. And that is, when someone is so worried about the next step in their career,
right,
and they lose sight of what they're currently doing, they're not going to be successful. They're going to have a harder time.
Right? Oh man.
Because they're so focused on the next step. I got to become a supervisor.
Right.
And by the way, they're typically motivated by the wrong reason. I want to become a supervisor because I want to make more money. Or I want to be someone's boss.
Yep.
Instead of I'm going to get really good at what I'm doing. I'm going to be observant about what's happening in front of me and behind me and to my sides, but I'm not going to let it. I need to do what I'm here to do.
Right.
It's kind of like, you guys are golfers. I know that. Yeah. And I love sports. I love any sport, and I'm just an average golfer, but I learned a long time ago with golf that I would get really pissed off if I had a bad shot. And sure enough, my game would just, the rest of the day would just go down the tubes.
Snowball.
Yeah. And you know, again, this is probably an age thing, but over time I finally learned, okay, look, don't let one bad shot screw up your day. Yeah. Hit a good one next time. Don't, you know, be worrying about, oh, if I get a six on this hole, I'm not going to break 90, or, you know, for you guys, I'm not going to break 70 or whatever.
I wish.
You know, I learned to be more patient and be able to say, okay, that didn't go very well.
Right.
That's water under the bridge. Just keep looking ahead.
Yep. I think there's a ton buried in this. I appreciate your answer of not being overly strategic, doing it for the right reasons. But what I think people need to hear is, by even being observant and seeing a challenge, a lot of times if you stay the course and you are executing in the way that you can execute, and bring more value even kind of than your current role set, opportunity will appear. And in a lot of ways, those quote unquote bad bosses can create certain opportunities for individuals who really can perform and want to progress.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, one of the things you just said, Paul, that I think people just gloss right over is, people want to get into their next job or get the next promotion. It's that mentality that, and again, it's so prevalent this day and age. It's like that dopamine hit, right?
Yeah,
they want that
quick hit. Right.
The quick hit.
Yeah.
And they've never mastered the role that they're in. You know, I said it when we started, I think the reason you're so good at your job now is because of all the layers that you've gone through in your career and the experiences you've had. you know, having a bad boss, having a challenging manager, I think that is the single reason you, after 3 years, and by the way, they've been our probably three most rapid growing years. Mm-hmm. You know, you've lived through some real interesting times where you probably thought, what in the world are these guys thinking right now? but because of your previous experiences, had you not have been through some of that, have you not had a bad boss or a challenging leader, whatever, you probably wouldn't have been equipped to deal with some of the things that have happened here over the last 3 years.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, the patience that you've shown me as a young CEO, the patience that you've shown our staff. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, there's a list of names, and a lot of people that listen to the podcast know folks that are on staff. And when we get rid of someone, or when someone, you know, decides to leave, whatever the case may be, you've lived through some really interesting phases where we tried something, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't walk in and demand, like, I want this person gone tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
You rolled with the punches. And we've had a lot of really tough conversations about some people. And you're like, man, just, you know, we're just going to stay patient and we'll put a plan in place. But I truly think that in our society these days, especially in the corporate world, as people want to climb the corporate ladder, like that patience and that loyalty and steadfastness, I don't know, it's a rare thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is. As I said, when I first started in my, you know, in business, in the, you know, in my early 20s, I worked for a Fortune 500 company. So I was in the corporate world. I was in that, and I loved it. I worked for a great company that had a great culture. And if you were willing to work hard, you were given opportunities. I mean, you earned them. You know, you earned them. But you know, the harder you worked, the more opportunities became available. I guess let me put it that way. Now you had to be flexible. I moved my wife and four kids. I mean, three of my four kids were born in different cities. You know, because we were always moving. About every 2 years, we moved. When I was with the 20 years with Boise Cascade, which became Office Max, I think we moved at least four or five times. Mm. And when our kids were young, and my wife was an absolute trooper, she loved it. It was an adventure for her, but it was a lot of work too, because oftentimes I would move 3 months before we'd sell the house, and even the family would be out there with me wherever I was going.
Yeah.
And so she was managing most of that by herself at that time. But, I think, again, it was something that you just did. You didn't, I mean, maybe this is part of my generation. We didn't ask a lot of questions. We just, you know, we just went.
Well, you didn't try to skip steps. I don't think your generation, you know, and it's, you see some of these people still these days, but majority of folks, and we see this, you know, especially when there's talent crunches in a specific industry or labor shortage, whatever you want to call it, it's very easy for people to skip steps. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna run the sweeper for the next 2 weeks, and then I'm experienced. So now I need to go to a dozer man, right? And you're a dozer man, and I'm a lead person, or I'm a senior supervisor, and you try to skip steps. And what ultimately happens, I think, is you stunt your growth in your career because you've never mastered the thing that really is the prerequisite to get you where you should go.
Right.
You can't be a senior level manager 5 years into the business. Right. You haven't done all the prerequisites and the tours of duty, we call them.
Yeah.
You haven't had all the tough conversations. You haven't had your teeth kicked in. Right. You haven't had the bad bosses enough to make those senior level decisions. And it's why, I mean, you're a senior person in our organization. The responses you give me to a crazy idea or a bad decision on my part are night and day different than the cynical response a younger person might have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. But you're looking at it with a different lens, and that lens is experience.
Yeah.
You know?
And Paul, I mean, even in describing your scope of your role, you talk about connecting dots, which if he's connecting dots, he's thinking differently about how to solve a problem, which whether it's a new idea or whatever, just there's so much richness even in how you describe what you are responsible for doing, mm-hmm. which is way beyond what a job description would say. Yeah. No job description says connect dots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't say that.
Right.
Or help an organization, work more effectively. It doesn't say that. But you're viewing that as your responsibility, even within your role, even outside of Turner and with our clients.
Right.
Like, that's just...
So if somebody had to ask you what, over the last 3 years, two-part question. A, what's fun about your job? But B, why have you stayed here, stayed committed, some would even say maybe even taken a step back in your career to work for a young CEO, a younger company mm-hmm. that's trying to do things differently in a big old industry. I mean, what's fun and why did you do that? Are they the same answer?
I think they're similar. So, for me, I love being part of a team. I like being part of it goes back to team sports. I played football in high school. I mean, I was an average athlete, but I love playing football. I like swimming, which was more of an individual sport. I was a pretty good swimmer as a younger person, and then I kept doing it because it was easy to do after I got out of organized sports. But I love team sports, and that's translated into business. I like working with people. I like winning, and I like winning as a team because I think it's just fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is something that I look at hard when I look at a company or a job. And I was fortunate. Prior to Turner Mining Group, I basically worked for two companies with a small hiatus for 1 year trying to do something on my own. But the reason I stayed at those companies for so long is because we had the right culture. We all kind of worked together. Even in the Fortune 500 company, the CEO, it's both the reason I stayed there and it's the reason I left, because he created, and we had probably 10,000 employees, which by today's standards is not a big deal. But back then, we were a $5 billion company. But he made it feel like a team. He had the ability, he had the charisma, he had the leadership skills to say, okay, your job is important. And you felt right. that. I can't exactly describe how he did that. I mean, I kind of know. But and then the next company I went to, same thing. Our CEO was a great leader, great visionary, and he made us feel like a team. And you wanted to be on that team. And so what attracted me to Turner Mining Group is the first night I met with you and Gant. I knew Gant, on a personal level, but I didn't know, I had never met you. I don't know if you remember when we met.
Yeah.
We were up in Chicago.
Yeah, had dinner in Chicago.
In Chicago, and I went home. And I was looking at a couple different options at that point, because I was thinking about leaving the company I was with, not for any bad reasons. It was simply because we were in coal at that time, and coal was really starting to have some challenges, and I started thinking, I might want to look at something different. And so, but when I met you guys, and you guys told me what you were doing, you told me your vision for the company and what you were trying to do and the focus on people and trying to change, bring something positive to the mining industry and change the mining industry, that was really exciting. And it still is 3 years later. In fact, it's probably even more exciting now because... I mean, it's taken me a while. I used to tell my old boss, I'm not a sprinter. I'm not someone who,
physically and metaphorically.
Physically and metaphorically. I'm more of a distance guy. Put me in that something's going to take a while to kind of warm up and get going. But once I get going, I don't like to stop. I like to keep going. And that's true in how I swim, for example. I mean, I like distance swimming. I'd rather swim distance than short races. And I think work is the same way. I think I'm in it for the long haul. And in part because I see your vision. It makes sense to me.
And you've seen the opportunity firsthand. I mean,
and I've seen the opportunity. When you go out to the mines and you talk to people and then you see the young people that are working for our company, and, the kinds of jobs that they have and the kinds of responsibilities that they can take on at very young ages without any formal education or degree. And these are some of the smartest people I've met. And this was true in my old business too. We dealt with a lot of people who were, tradesmen, never went to formal schooling, yet some of the smartest people I ever met, because they didn't have the advantage of going to formal school, let's say,
right,
the way maybe we did, but yet mechanically, technically, these people have minds that figure stuff out on their own. And that just amazes me. And I saw it when I worked in the coal business. We were in the consumption side in coal-fired power plants, just unbelievably smart people and just great down-to-earth people, which I loved. And that was one of the other things that attracted me to this industry and to Turner Mining Group, is because same thing. You've got just great people in the mining industry. And I also saw the opportunity, because there was and is a brain drain, if you will, of tribal knowledge leaving the mining industry. Guys my age who have worked 40 years, who have all this institutional knowledge, retiring.
Right.
And there's no way to pass that on unless you've been mentoring people along the way. So when I saw, when I looked at the three core values of Turner Mining Group, which by the way, was another thing, I think we live our values and we keep them simple. Safety, people, innovation. I mean, but that's what it's all about. Right. And so that made sense to me, that hey, if we can make this attractive and get young people to come in, no one else is doing that. And it wasn't happening in my previous industry in coal. Everybody's like, well, that industry's dying. I'm not going to go into a dying industry.
Yeah.
This industry's not dying. If it's more important now than it's ever been.
Well, and it's wild. Sarah just walked in and was taking pictures of us and probably made you feel a little bit nervous. it's wild to see, and it's what we've always preached, right? We want to be a media company that then has a people business, and we just happen to do mining, right? Yeah. But, for me, it's exciting to see guys like you come in here, get on a podcast, get your picture taken. Like, it's totally different. But guess what? How do you get young people thinking about this industry? Well, you got to show them.
Yeah. Exactly.
The younger generations aren't becoming less visual learners.
Right.
They've got phones in their face at 2 years. Right. They're going to be more visual.
Right. Yes.
So we have to go where their attention is. But I really want to touch on what it is I think you do really well, which is sales. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that I think I'm a natural sales guy. I've said it a million times. I'm not really a mining guy. I know enough to be dangerous, but I love sales. I love marketing. That's where my passion is. But, so many companies, especially younger companies, people that, want to start something. We've had people that have left here, started their own thing, and been successful. Like, sales is the lifeblood. Nothing else happens without sales. Mm-hmm. You don't get to hire people. You don't get to buy the equipment. You don't get to do anything unless you make a sale first. And so that's why, you were such a critical piece to our puzzle, because you took a lot of the responsibilities out of my hands and you've done a way better job than I ever did. But like you said a few minutes ago, it took you about a year or so to kind of wrap your head around what am I doing? What is this industry? How does my role work and all those things? And so, I don't know, I just want to get from your perspective and your brain, how do you think about sales? Not even so specific to mining services, which is what we do, but for a young company, if you had to come back in here 3 years ago, you know where we're at now and you've seen what we're doing now, but if you had to come back in as Paul Moran day one at Turner Mining Group, with the knowledge you now have, I mean, how do you think about sales for a young, growing company?
Well, I think, if I knew then what I know now about the industry, because it did take me probably a good 12 months to really sort of understand how things, and I'm still learning. You're always learning. I think I would have moved faster. I would have adopted social media faster, and I'm still adopting it. You probably think, oh my gosh.
Yeah, one post a year.
He's not even cool.
We're going to have a chat after this.
Yeah. But I totally...
Bought in now, though. You see the effects.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I wish I understood it back then, like on day one, as well as I... And I haven't even scratched the surface. But I'm mainly a LinkedIn guy, which I think that still qualifies as social media.
Yes, right? And that is probably one of the most critical current platforms.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I mean, it is. And I remember I had a guy when I was at Boise. This is, how old is LinkedIn? 20 years old? He was a young guy. He came up to me. He said, hey, you need to get on LinkedIn. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What is LinkedIn? He was a great guy. Yep. And he goes, come on, I'll help you sign up. And we signed up, and I didn't touch it until I came to Turner Mining Group 20 years later
but
or whatever
think
it was.
Think of the impact that your presence would have had on LinkedIn 10 years ago, 15 years, and now.
Oh,
yeah. The contacts you'd have. I mean, it's just in the last 3 years, I'm sure it's changed.
Totally. And so I would have hit LinkedIn even harder. You know, you're the one who taught me it, really. We had one guy in my previous company who was getting into it, and he was a field guy, and I applaud him now. He wasn't a sales guy, but he was connecting with people on LinkedIn, and then he'd say, hey, Paul, these guys are interested in our transfer shoots. You know, and yeah. he'd forward it to me, and I'd be like, how the heck did he do that? And then I realized it wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I would have hit that harder. I think I would have, I wasn't sure coming into this business how important trade associations, trade shows were. You know, I've been in the previous industry. It wasn't, we didn't need that. We were able to kind of sell without that. I think it's really important in our industry because that's where the networking happens.
Right.
Not all the trade shows and not all the trade associations but those, and I probably would have hit those harder early on. It took me about a year to kind of understand how much you can accomplish by 3 days in Salt Lake City at the Society of Mining Engineers, for example.
Yeah. It's amazing how small the industry
is. It really is. Yeah.
From like a relational perspective.
Right. Yeah. Right.
If you know one guy that's worked at four or five mines, the amount of people he knows and the weight his name carries is wild.
It's incredible. And I think that goes to the connecting the dots. I think I could have, you know, had I understood that earlier on, I could have moved faster.
Right.
But I think what's cool about mining is it's truly a global industry. It's huge, but it's also kind of ironic because in so many ways it's small because of that. You know, people who, Australians, for example, who are here in the United States, who you get to know because they work in mining and they've worked all over the world, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, 10 years ago, people weren't connecting the way they are now.
Exactly. I
mean, you know, you couldn't be, I mean, I guess you date way back to pen pals, you know.
Right. Sure.
Sure, maybe. But the way we can connect with people these days.
And at scale.
At scale.
Yeah.
It is. It really is amazing. So I think, you know, and I think the other thing, and you and I have talked about this, Keaton and Thomas, is that, you know, I think that, you know, getting networked into those people that are connected, who know the other people in these markets, and being able to meet people in person. I still think even through the pandemic and you know, with the technology that we have with virtual calls and the ability to communicate instantly and virtually, but there nothing to this day substitutes being on site, meeting face to face with a customer, meeting your people, being with your people. I mean, to me, that's still so important.
Yeah. One of the things that you implemented here, which I always thought was amazing, was quarterly business reviews with our customers, which is not something that, you know, I really thought about, but when you're forcing your customer to sit down once a quarter and tell us what we're good at and what we're terrible at and where we need improvement.
Right.
I mean, that's powerful.
Yeah.
You know, I wish I would have done that day one because I'd have got a lot of really good feedback from some customers that have saved me a lot of time and money and heartache.
Right.
But I think just listening, it's funny, you know, we talk about sales, we talk about marketing. Obviously we love to be loud and have fun on Instagram and LinkedIn. But if you don't have good people and offer a good product or service, the sales cycle becomes really difficult.
Yeah,
right? Very few repeat customers. Yeah. You know, you're kind of selling something that's hard to sell. I don't know if you've had that experienced in the past. But, you know, having a brand makes sales a little easier, but having a brand that also can, you know, stand behind a really good service is something totally different.
You have to be able to back it up. And I think that's, and that's the amazing thing about Turner Mining Group and what you guys did early on. And, you know, I know before I was here, you know, you had really, the branding was unbelievable. The leveraging of social media has been unbelievable from day one. But you guys had to go through, by the time I got here, you know, the company was 3 or 4 years old. You guys had a portfolio of customers. And so I could go out and say, yep, and here's another project that we did. Here's a couple projects we're working on. But in the early days, when you guys, I think when you were on your own starting out, I mean, I applaud the heck out of that because, you know, you had to build that book. At least when I came in, I had customers that I could point to. And that's so important.
Yeah.
And now, you know, as we go to the next level and get into some of the areas that we've gotten into out west and down south, I mean, we need to keep building on that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like stepping stones.
Yeah. But so I think one of the things that I've probably underestimated or undervalued the most, especially when I started out, now one could argue sales was much harder for me back then than it is for you. Sales is easy for you now, right? Because we've got some projects and people have heard of us and so on and so forth. But one of the things that I've probably underestimated the most, and I think a lot of people do this, is real experience. Like senior level people that have, my mom and dad always used to say this, and used to drive me nuts. My mom specifically, she would say, "How old am I?" Like, right, I would tell her, "Oh, mom, this is how it's supposed to be." And she's like, "No, trust me, how old am I?" Right. And what she was basically saying was like, "Hey, listen, I've got a lot of life experience. You don't. Just listen to what I'm telling you." And you can go back and look at the record back when we first started. I kind of like bucked the whole experience thing. I was like, "Oh, I left because people didn't listen to my ideas, and you know, who are these people to say that, you know, a young guy can't win?" And young guys can win, but having older experienced people, and the older I get and the more experience I get, the more wise people like you become, because mm-hmm. I realize now, man, if I'd have just listened to that guy, or if I'd have, you know, if I'd have just asked some questions and stopped acting like I knew it, I would have really learned some valuable things. I think it's a big challenge, especially for young people. I don't know if you deal with this with your kids, but we have a tendency to not want to listen to people that have experience, and maybe not all of it's the best experience, but you guys have a lot of very valuable things to teach us if we're just open enough to listen and learn from it.
Yeah, I think my experience is it goes both ways. I mean, I think what you just said, it's true, but I think also older people like myself and your mom, for example, or we can get caught in the trap of, you know, well, when I was your age, or, you know,
yeah.
and that can be counterproductive. I run into that with my kids where we'll be talking about things and, you know, I don't want to be the one that's, and I'm sure I do it. I know I do it. But, you know, in the good old days.
Oh, yeah.
Because that doesn't do it. That's like, that just turns everybody off right away.
I walk to school uphill both ways.
No shoes, yeah, rain, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you know, and we laugh about that. Yeah. I mean, I laugh about that with my peers. I have a good, close group of buddies, and, you know, we'll talk about that stuff. And someone will get on the, you know, the tangent. Oh, the kids, they don't know what we had it. So we had to do so much. And I'm like, yeah, okay, guys, let's dial it back a little bit. It wasn't that hard. I mean, it wasn't. And I think, and then, you know, going back to your point, I think what I've learned, you know, working for younger people, I want to stay young as long as I can. I mean, you know, God willing, if my body holds up, but
I don't see how it couldn't.
The way you stay young is you, my dad used to say it when he was older, he liked hanging out with younger people. And that kept him young. And I feel the same way. I want to hang out with younger people. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I love all my buddies and stuff. But I don't want to be the guy sitting around saying, oh, my back hurts or this. Yeah, it hurts, but I'm not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
I want to try to go, you know, play football with, you know, my grandchild someday or whatever. But anyways, where I was going with that is that I think that it really is. It goes both ways. We can learn so much from your generation. I've learned so much from my kids. And part of it is they've done things that I never would have thought doing with my parents. And that is they'll challenge me. Mm. Why do you think that? Why did you say that? I'm like, well, you're not allowed to ask me that question. and I haven't quite figured out how to. I'm like, well, I never. The thought of me, like, challenging my mom or my dad, that was like a death sentence, you know? It was like, just do it, you know? Just shut up and do it. And so I do applaud, you know, your generation and the younger generations for, you know, asking questions and being more inquisitive. Now, I still probably have the old school generation in me like, okay, we don't need to question that.
Right.
This is tried and true.
Right.
This has withstood the test of time. We don't need to test that.
Yeah.
It's good.
Sure.
We're good.
Sure.
But I, you know, in the long run, I think it's good. I mean, I think that you really, it makes you think.
Yeah.
And it's made me rethink things.
Yeah.
Some, and it, and in many ways it helps me reinforce what I already thought. I just have more, I have a better understanding of why I feel the way I do. Maybe that's a better way of putting it.
And that mutual respect, I think, from the older generation to the younger generation and vice versa, I think that's probably like the real unlock, at least for the mining industry, right? The knowledge transfer that we're talking about.
Yes.
If the older generation just wrote all of us young folks off and said, wow, they're lazy, they don't want to work, they don't want to listen, blah, 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 and vice versa, the younger kids didn't think they could learn anything from the older folks.
Yeah,
that's where there's just a giant block in this knowledge transfer that has to happen. Yeah. I wish 10 years ago I'd have listened to my uncle differently, you know, or my dad differently, or what, you know. And now that I'm getting older, I'm at that weird age, right, mid-30s, where you see the opportunities that you missed out on to listen and learn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you don't want to make those same mistakes again, you know, in your 40s, 50s, 60s. But I think it really is like a mutual respect, and I don't know how kids get it in their 20s.
But Keaton, I think that the other side of that coin is that had you, and I'm just speculating, but it, maybe had you listened or tried to not make, like, they're trying to keep you from making a mistake, let's say, whatever it is, and you kind of brushed it off, and now you're looking back, maybe I shouldn't have brushed it off. But on the other hand, you may not have started a company.
Right.
You may not, if you took the cautious approach and tried to follow and say, okay, you know, avoid, I mean, I applaud any entrepreneur, because I've thought about it over the years, and I, quite frankly, it's taken me 40-some years to realize I probably don't have what it takes.
It has to be a little bit psychotic.
You got to be willing to put everything on the line. And I think that's the one thing. And I've worked for entrepreneurs before, but my previous boss was he founded the company, and you know, 38 years ago, and he took some big risks. And you know, when we were all that age, I had three young kids at that point. And I'm like, I tend to think I really was kind of a wimp. I took the safe route, you know. I just did what everybody told me to do because that was the right thing to do and that was the safe thing to do. And sometimes I wonder, I wonder what if I would have done it. But realistically, I probably don't have the right makeup to be that kind of a risk taker. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess my point is that thank God you didn't listen to, because you probably wouldn't be doing what you were are doing today. So that's the both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope to keep enough of that edge to where I still take risks, you know, late in my life, but I've taken off the facade of like this tough guy, not going to listen to anybody, do it my way persona, which is still fun. I still have that around here to these people, you know, no good ideas unless they're my idea type thing, you know. But I think there is a ton that we can learn from the older generation. And I love that you have the opposite perspective, or maybe not the opposite perspective, but the other side of the coin. You can learn a lot from the younger generation.
I have. I mean, in the last 3 years. And of course, I think one of the things about, and you guys both have kids, and you'll, as your kids get older, you, one of the things kids taught me, especially as they got older, is how much you, what's the right way to say this? How much you really don't know. And what I mean by that is, as your kids get older and you see them facing the same life decisions and crossroads and inflection points that you've already passed through as an adult,
right?
You sit there and think, now that I see them going through it, I might think about that differently if I were going through it again, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure.
And you don't try to like stop them and say, whoa, dude, hold on. I've already done this. I went down this road. Don't do that.
You know, no, exactly. My wife and I have tried hard to let our kids make their own decisions. There are times where you want to insert yourself, but the older they get, and especially now my kids are all grown adults, you know, your guys' age, and, you know, they have to, I'm happy to, if they have a question or want to talk about stuff, and we do, absolutely. But if I feel like they're going, doing something that, okay, unless they're going to, it's going to hurt them physically, or, you know, what can you do? You have to let them kind of learn. There's what you were saying earlier, I don't know if you know what Mark Twain said about when he was 17?
No.
So when Mark Twain was 17, he said he couldn't believe how stupid his dad was and how irrational his dad was. And when he turned 21, he couldn't believe how much his dad had learned in 4 years.
It's so true. I mean, it's, you know, man, it'd be hilarious to play back the record of some of the things I've said over the years and the perspective I have now. I'll never forget. I'll tell this short story. You know, we always camp every year Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on dirt bikes and four-wheelers and always outside. And so we're camping. And I've got this bright idea. I'm probably 11 or 12 years old. I've got this bright idea. I'm going to build a ramp so I can ramp my four-wheeler off, because I, you know, watch the X Games. I think, oh, this is the thing to do. So I spent all afternoon building this ramp. My dad walks out. And again, we're camping. We're out in the middle of nowhere, long ways from hospitals and all these things. My dad walks out and says, son, I don't think that ramp's going to work. And I'm like, Dad, you don't know anything. Like, you don't know how to ramp anything. I've never seen my dad ramp anything, right? So I'm just thinking, Dad, you don't know how to ramp anything. You know, little did I not realize he also grew up on bikes. And so, you know, so anyway, I've got this Brad Paisley song playing in my head. And here I go. I'm going to take off. I'm going to ramp this. And I was inches from death. I mean, I went up over the bars. Here comes the four-wheeler. Oh. It was just a horribly constructed ramp. But as a 12-year-old looking at it, I think, well, that thing's sweet. Yeah. I'm going to catch air and maybe do a heel clicker or something. Who knows? I almost died, and then I get up, I look over at my dad, and he's looking at me like, when are you going to listen? I've been trying to tell you what's best for you since you were, you know, newborn for 12 years now, and you haven't listened yet. So that day, that is burned in my brain.
Yeah.
But even a million other examples where now I look back, and I'm like, man, you know, why didn't I just listen?
Yeah.
It had just been easier to listen. So, but it's good perspective. I mean, I do think this knowledge transfer that has to happen. I mean, our industry is doomed if we don't take some experience from the older folks and transfer it to some of these younger people. It's doomed. I also, in a weird way now, am seeing that if we don't get some of these older folks to respect the younger generation and what they can bring and new ideas and new ways of doing things, social media, you know, what kills me, and Thomas is sitting here with, you know, his Turner staffing hat on. So you, Paul, put your Turner staffing hat on. What kills me is these big mining companies, multi-billion dollar global companies, will talk all day long about not having enough people. We can't get enough applicants. We can't get enough people to join our team. And you go on their LinkedIn, and they don't have one picture of a mine site. They don't have one picture of a real employee doing anything fun or cool or laugh. They have zero videos. They don't show anything about what they do.
Right.
So how are young people supposed to get excited about that. And to me, that's the young person perspective on the industry.
Yeah, or even get educated about it.
The older person,
keep it all a secret.
The older person would say, well, yeah, but you know, there's probably an MSHA violation in that video, yeah, so we can't yeah. show it. You know, so right. I respect both perspectives yeah. now, yeah. but I think, man, we've got to learn from each other, and that mutual respect is a real thing.
Well, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's one of the things I've learned, because I'm from that generation that, especially from the corporate world, which was you got to be careful what you say, you know you don't want to do anything that could be perceived as not appropriate or not politically yep. correct yep. or not safe, or could yep. be a lawsuit waiting to happen. And that really kind of ties us all up if we think that. And that's one of the things that I've learned coming here. I mean, in my previous company, we were a smaller private company, so we were able to do things a little bit freer, but you're exactly right. I mean, you don't see that stuff.
Yeah. I also think that what Paul is saying is very true, which is that is so ingrained into that culture. Part of why I'm like, okay, even if they post the video on LinkedIn, until they actually fundamentally address deep down in that organization all of that hesitancy and inertia that Paul just elaborated on, how are you going to get an 18-year-old excited? There's no chance.
Right.
Well, and to me, I used to think, well, it's just the young people. We got to get the 18-year-olds excited. To me, it's not even that. How many applicants do we get a day? If you had to guess, you just looked at the numbers here.
Between both sides of Turner, we're averaging about 30 applicants unsolicited a day.
30 people apply to work for us a day.
Yes.
How many of those are 18?
Two.
A couple.
I was going to say one, two.
So to me, the game is not how do we get young people. The game is how do we get attention from all people.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, right? Exactly.
Right.
Like, and I think these companies, some of these are our competitors, some of these are our customers, some of these are just yep. other industry folks, right?
Oh, yeah.
How do we get these people to realize that, like, guys, you have no audience that's hearing anything that you have to say because you're not saying anything.
Right.
You're not yeah. showing anything. And so, sure, you're going to have a labor problem.
Yeah, of course right. that's going to be the result.
Nobody knows you're a company.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Or okay, they know you're a company. They don't know what you're about. They haven't heard from your CEO. Your CEO hasn't posted, right? He's right. not been in yep. front of an audience and talked. Or
right.
So I'm kind of ranting, but I think it is truly an opportunity for us. And it's why I'm so excited about you, because you're so open to submersing yourself into a young company, mm-hmm. young culture, trying things, new ideas, different way of doing things.
We got like a joke question that was kind of about this, which is kind of funny that I'm glad that this all got brought up. And it was something to the effect of like, Paul, tell us like your favorite young person inside of Turner, or like something like that. But I think it's interesting, right? Because even the questions we get, right? Like that comes back.
Yeah.
Which says something.
Right.
Whereas there is no chance that question gets asked of any senior executive at Corporation ABC. Mm-hmm. Like the person wouldn't even reply with the question.
Yeah.
And that person is in our sphere, right? In our mm-hmm. network. And they're saying like, oh yeah, like Paul gets this experience, gets to see this, gets to live this. Like, and then they ask that. Like to me, that's just a super, yeah. like it's a very poignant kind of example of why I think it's just so necessary that these other companies like really take a look at that.
Yeah. I think there's a certain stodginess, if that's the right word.
That's a new word for me. I'll have to look that one up.
In corporate, you know, just kind of a stiffness, kind of a vanilla flavor instead of, you know, and I compare, to your point earlier, I wasn't from the mining industry. I was from an industrial company I worked for before. We were in heavy industry, but it wasn't mining, a little bit of mining on the coal side. But I think that, you know, prior to that, I was in a big corporation, a big multinational corporation. And I think that, you know, they do. That's part of the reason I left that is because I felt like we had lost. Even though we were a big company, we had the, we had a, what was called a general manager structure. And I aspired when I started in that company to be a general manager because they let you run a business. So you were, it was like being a, it was like being an entrepreneur, but you sort of were under the umbrella of and sort of had the protection of the larger company. But you were empowered to make decisions, hire, fire your own management team, manage the customer, you know, you, you grow the business, take chances. And this was actually at, back at that time, which was the 80s and early 90s, that was pretty visionary for that company at that time. I mean, you guys would look at it today and go, okay, what's the big deal? That was a big deal back then. To, you know, and I was 20, I became a general manager at age 29, I think, or 28. And I was allowed to go do that in the Gulf Coast United States was my region out of Houston. And it was the best, you know, five years I could have had or 6 years because I, in, again, I'm not, it's not even close to someone who starts their own business, but within the confines of a large business, I was allowed to do that. But what happened was we were, we eventually, the company morphed and we became stodgy. That's the word that I use. And then when you become stodgy, it's no fun.
Stifle creativity.
It's like I flew United. I usually fly Southwest, and Southwest has had its problems. But I fly Southwest because it's really convenient for me. And this is not a commercial for Southwest, and they've got their problems.
Although they could be a sponsor of the podcast.
And I'm rethinking. I'm rethinking it. I have faith they will figure their issues out. But here's the difference. Last week, going up to Big Timber up in Montana, I could only get up there on United to Billings. And so I flew United, and I'm a Chicago guy, and I love United. United's a great Chicago
hometown,
company,
exactly.
And I am pro business. I'm still pro Chicago in spite of all the bullshit.
What are you talking about? Chicago?
That's a whole other podcast.
But
my point is that that you know people at a Southwest, you know, the flight attendants, they're loose, they're easy, they're funny, they're, you know, but they get the message, they get the job done. You know, I get on United and, you know, they, it wasn't a great experience.
It's stodgy.
And then they, you know, Southwest makes fun, you know, they give you pretzels now and they get, and that's what, you know, that's what you're going to get. United says, well, we're going to, you know, we're going to give you, we'll have a meal or we'll have a snack service. They give you a cookie that's about that big. And I'm thinking, I would rather, that's an insult. Don't give me that cookie. I'm good. Okay.
Give me nothing.
I'm happy.
That's awesome.
There were, and I could give you, the list goes on, but I was just comparing the two on that. And I'm like, why does Southwest get it and these other guys don't?
Well, and you have to imagine Southwest's applicants, both probably on the pilot side and on the, and anybody that's flight attendant is probably higher and greater because of this. And actually, this is another interesting fact. 50% of the questions we've gotten is how can I get a job at your company?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So like that's another.
So do you want to give them a plug?
Who?
The 50 people trying to get in here.
I don't know. I mean, it's all Instagram handles, so I don't know who these people are.
But I think is important, you know, so the marketing, Sarah's hired a marketing intern for this summer, and we were talking, we were talking about marketing from a business standpoint and brand and how important it is to develop the brand, and that's what Turner has been so successful at. But the other side of that, which is, that brand also is a way to present the company to potential applicants.
I would say
that's equally as important as branding for awareness for customers that we're targeting and that we want to go after and sell to, is that it's important that people get an idea of who we are, and that attracts people who want to be a part of this.
Right.
To our company. And I think that's really important.
Well, it's funny you say that. I would say 95% of everything I've ever done from a branding and social media and marketing perspective has been employer brand focused, meaning I want to preach to my people that are interested in working for me is who I'm talking to.
Right.
I'll go win the business. I'll figure out how to get customers on board, but 0% of my customers in that are running copper mines, metal mines, so on and so forth are on Instagram, like searching for my profile because they want to hire us to do business. It's employer brand. And that's the, I mean, I truly believe if you do a great job marketing to people, employees, customers see that.
Exactly.
Well, I'm smirking because, you know, so when I go on a sales call, and I think I've told you this before, but I don't know if I've kind of given you this experience. So
is this a secret that we shouldn't let out? Is this a big sales secret?
No.
That's okay.
Let's open. Well, no, it's not a sale.
But we need more competitors.
No,
anyway,
so here, well, here's what I, yeah, yeah right. No, I, okay, I'm going to shut up. What's really interesting is, yeah, you know, the let's say the 40 and under generation knows us extremely well. And they watch our videos, they connect with us on LinkedIn and Instagram and all that stuff, and they're engaged. And my generation, so when I do get a chance to see a VP or a CEO or a president or whomever it is, and I'm talking to them, and I'll say, you know, one of my first questions is, "You ever heard of Turner Mining Group?" And I know, and I can tell by looking at some of their faces, they know us.
Yes.
They don't want to admit it.
But they don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, that means
I saw you on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm you know, looking at Instagram posts all day, yeah. You know, and they can't
permit
you to admit that. And by the way, I say that because that's, you know, my kids are like, you know, when social media first became popular, or when it was starting, I'm like, you know what? I'm on the computer all day in my office, on the phone. The last thing I want to do is come right. home and page through Facebook back then, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
I've never had a Facebook account. But sure enough, my wife will be, and it was Facebook. Now she's big on it. You guys should hire her. She's she's totally into social media.
She's got the business.
She's got her business.
Number one cookie in the world. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely in the greater Chicago area.
There's no question about it.
Oh, it's insane.
But you know, I know that what happens, we'll be on the couch watching something and she'll be like, oh, and I'm like, what? And then I'm like leaning over, looking at, you know.
Trying to see.
So, like, I'm too cool to,
to get sucked into TikTok until you see your first one.
And then you're just like, what? Wait,
it's 2 hours later and you wake up in a cold sweat.
Yeah.
What happened?
Exactly.
Exactly. So, anyways, I think I see that at higher levels. People are paying attention.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this has been fun. I mean, we're over an hour in. We have another meeting to jump to. A think tank, which will be fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul, for coming for that too.
Thanks for having
me. Older people, younger people, all getting together and spewing out ideas over beer. I don't know anything. I always ask everyone that comes on, what if you could say anything to our audience? And again, going back to the employer brand, our audience is our people, right? Mm-hmm. If other people outside of this company listen to the podcast, great. Appreciate you guys listening. But if you could say anything to our people, and not every single one of our employees listens, so maybe we have to go deal with that. That may be a separate problem. But if you could say anything to our people and all of our employees, I mean, what would you leave them with? Someone that's experienced, that's climbed the corporate ladder a couple different times now, and now you're here living through this experience with us. Anything to leave people with?
I would just say that I think, you know, work hard. Understand what your company does, understand their purpose, and then how you fit into that. Why does my job matter? Mm-hmm. And if you can't figure it out, someone should be able to explain it to you. And if they can't explain that to you, then maybe you are in the wrong company.
Yep.
But I think work hard, be patient, and most of the time, good things will come.
Yeah.
Whatever that means, whether it's a promotion, you know, more job satisfaction from the job that you're in, but be patient.
Work hard and be patient. Man, it's almost like we've said that before.
Yeah.
A couple of times. It's funny. People say all the time, there's a guy I know, he lost a bunch of weight recently, and everyone saw him for the first time. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa, what in the world have you been doing? Like, people were waiting to hear, like, oh, I'm taking this special drug, or I'm taking this pill, or... He's like, yeah, dude, I'm doing this new thing. It's cutting edge. You've got to try it. And everyone's like on the edge of their seat. They can't wait, right? The guy's ripped. I'm eating healthy and I'm exercising. Right. And everyone just kind of sat back. And it's like, and he kind of was joking. He's like, guys, seriously, that is how simple it is. It's not easy, but it's simple. It's,
right.
Right.
Work hard and be patient.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Right.
But I just truly believe it's the best advice you can give because especially young people, and it's not easy, but it's simple. If you do those two things, good things will happen.
I agree.
You might have a bad boss or whatever for a while, but if you're more patient than the other people that have to deal with that bad boss, you automatically win
that
trial period. So I love it. I think it's great advice.
I agree.
It is. Thank you, Paul, so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Enjoyed the heck out of it. We've got two more podcasts this week, and we're going to fill the hopper up so we can sprinkle these things out.
Yeah, they'll be coming out soon.
Yeah, plenty of other fun guests. So if you, I'm going to steal this again. I'm going to start using this. If you like the podcast, send it to someone you like. If you hated it, send it to someone you hate.
Say it.
Thanks.
This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live.